You know, buying car batteries is a lot like buying a pair of jeans. You gotta make sure they fit just right. Whether you need a battery that's ruggedly dependable, equipped with more amp for accessories, or boasts the latest technology, AutoZone is your battery headquarters. And as for the jeans, just remember the golden rule. Too tight ain't right.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Blog Talk Radio. Now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, it's Plain Talk Radio, a talk show dedicated to promoting an appreciation and understanding of business aviation, hosted by Stuart Lapayoker. It's Plain Talk Radio.
The exploration of space will go ahead.
And it is one of the great adventures of all time.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Many years ago, the great British explorer George Mallory, on Mount Everest, was asked, why did he want to climb it? He said, because it is there. So space is there. And we're going to climb it.
June 30, 2011, I'm your host, Stuart Lapayoker, coming to you live from London, England. And I'm joined by my guest co-host, Oliver Ross from the UK at Harbottle, and we're literally sitting across the table from each other. Hello, Oliver.
Hi, Stuart. This is a very new thing. I noticed that the announcement that you made was that we were sitting in Fort Lauderdale. Now, here is the triumph of substance over pretend.
Well, we've got a great show for you today. Joining us is Chris Quinn and Marie O'Brien from Matheson Ormsby Prentice in Dublin, Ireland. Also joining us is Mark Byrne. And we'll be talking about the benefits of Ireland to business aviation and other aviation issues. And we'll also be talking to Mark Byrne about alternatives to registration in the U.S., including registration in the Isle of Man. Be sure to enter the chat room on your screen or give us a call with your questions or comments using the numbers you see on your screen or our toll-free numbers, 877-511-1032. Or if you've registered at Blog Talk Radio, you can click to talk or Skype us. You can add us to your iTunes from the Blog Talk Radio, Plain Talk Radio page, and follow the show schedule using some widgets on the page that will drop the show onto Outlook. If you have a new product or service that serves the business aviation community and would like to be interviewed, drop us a note at airplaneguy@plaintalkradio.com. There's the usual disclaimer that you can hear on our archive shows. Although the show may touch upon legal, tax, or regulatory issues, nothing contained in the broadcast should be relied upon as legal advice appropriate to your situation, which can only be given by your own legal counsel, and the opinions you hear of our guests represent their personal views and not necessarily those of the organization with which they are affiliated or Plain Talk Radio. So, this is our first on-location broadcast, and we're coming to you live from London. Oliver, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
There is a bit of a delay. In fact, you have yourself on mute. The red lights are blinking. Attaboy. Would you like to say that again?
Yes, I would like to say that.
I'm glad I could actually see that from here instead of being in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Okay?
Otherwise, that might have been a bit of a challenge. Yes, thank you very much, Stuart. welcome to London. It's very nice to have you.
Or we would have to resort to the string and the cup that we did when we were kids. We have been here since, when did we get here? We got here Monday morning, and I will tell you that, you know, we woke up with a headache from the jet lag, and that day we got to a pub, and we had legitimate English food, fish and chips, and I watched a sport that after an hour, I still couldn't figure out what was going on. Cricket.
Cricket.
I'm pretty smart, I think, and I couldn't figure it out. What's the key?
Well, cricket is a very strange game, which was first played by the English in the Raj in India. And in fact, at that time, the 19th century, the British and the French confronted each other over a line in India, and as it happens, the English won, with the result that cricket is played all over the world. Just imagine, if the French had won, people would be playing boule all over the world. It's probably just as well that the British won. Yes, cricket is a totally impenetrable Byzantine game.
There is a pause after almost every ball where they're trying to figure something out.
That's right. That's the
exact. Okay. And they all look a little quizzical
after every
ball is hit, or whatever that thing is called. Okay. Well, we did the tour bus. We went to the Tower of London to see the jewels. We then took the cruise to the London Eye, and we went on the London Eye, and that was really tremendous. It wasn't here the last time I was here. I wasn't here. I haven't been here since I was in college. And then what did we do? I don't remember. Well, we've done a lot of things. And today we saw the changing of the guard and had lunch in Hyde Park. So anyway, our guests are saying, what is going on? Chris and Marie, how are you?
Very good, Stuart. Thank you.
Good, Stuart. Thank you.
I'm glad to see you're enjoying London. You have seen more sights in London than I have, and I have made several attempts to go to London on holidays that just simply haven't worked out for one reason or another, but one of these days.
Well, I thought it would be interesting to have a mix of London and Dublin today. I must tell you that I've listened to the English speak, I've listened to the Irish speak, and I've listened to the Scots, and I don't understand what the Scots are saying. Most times.
That's probably because you asked them to buy a drink.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Ireland, and I know obviously everyone who's involved in business aviation knows that the International Registry is located there. Tell us a little bit about the importance of Ireland to aviation transactions in general, and then we can maybe drill down a little bit on business aviation.
Well, Ireland, I suppose, for the last 35 years, since the mid-70s, really mid-1970s, has been involved in largely in commercial aviation. Over that period of time, has developed a knowledge pool and a connection to aviation that has grown over the years. And I suppose Ireland is now synonymous with aviation and the leasing and financing of aircraft. They say about over half of the aircraft that fly in the world are connected to Ireland in some way, shape, or form. They're either leased from here, or leased through here, or registered here. So there is there is quite a large volume of aircraft that are connected to Ireland. There are reasons why Ireland is used in and is connected to the aviation world, and principally it's the knowledge pool, and also there are two tax reasons really: the 12.5% corporate tax rate for trading or active income, and you know that's the reason why the leasing companies such as CIT, AWOS, Oryx, you know, and others are based here. GECAS, you know, indeed, and because with tax depreciation, effectively, that means tax deferral forever if you're a, if you're an aircraft lessor and you're continually trading and aircraft. Also, the aviation world looks to Ireland to, for access to its double tax treaty network, where principally there is a withholding tax in payable by the lessees or airlines, and that can be you know avoided or brought down if you pay the rent to an Irish lessor, and you know the jurisdictions that are you know that are you know involved there are China. It takes the withholding tax from 10 down to 6%. India, Italy, Russia are a few more. That all takes it down to nil. Korea, nil as well. And then I suppose also the Irish Aviation Authority take on foreign-operated aircraft onto their register of civil aircraft, and you know that's been done by the Irish Aviation Authority for the last you know 35 years really, and they see it not as a they see it as facilitating and helping you know the leasing and aviation industry sector, and you know they have aircraft registered which operate in about 15 different countries. And you know that's facilitated by the delegation of the day-to-day responsibility for the supervision of the aircraft to the local aviation authority in the relevant in the jurisdiction of operation, and that's done under the Article 83 of the Chicago Convention. Marie, I don't know if you want to say something about the Cape Town Convention and you know the location of it here and how that has helped.
Certainly, it's definitely one of the strings in Ireland's bow is that now it has the international registry based here for the Cape Town Convention, and it just highlights again, I suppose, Ireland's prominence in aircraft. But the registry itself has allows the registration of the international interest under the Cape Town Convention, and I think the convention itself has really grown since 2006, and people have put a lot more faith and have a lot more confidence in the rights and the protections that it affords. So we see a lot of people look to, particularly us, or look to Ireland because it was one of the first contracting states and because it hosts the IR to give them advice in relation to this, particularly new jurisdictions who are coming online with the convention, who are ratifying it and trying to figure out what it's all about.
So the site is for some of the litigation related to the International Registry is actually in Ireland, and I guess my question is whether you've seen much, if any, of litigation associated with the IR.
You're correct, exactly. Basically, the Commercial Court in Ireland, which is expedited court process in relation to commercial, high-value commercial matters, applies in relation to any Cape Town disputes involving the registry. There hasn't been any litigation, none that has gone to the courts yet in relation to the registry. So it's one of those things that it will be interesting when it happens, although you know no one wants to be the first. But to answer your question, there hasn't actually been any litigation yet.
Hasn't been any. Have you seen an increasing interest from EU citizens or those elsewhere to avoid U.S. registration through the owner trust mechanism and instead use Ireland or surrounding countries?
For under Cape Town or for registration of the aircraft?
Registration of the aircraft.
Yeah. Not necessarily. It's
no.
not. It doesn't. I suppose if FAA registration works, you know, it has its purposes, and then registration with the IA, you know, fulfills and its purposes in relation to the transactions that it would apply to. But it's not a case that we see them moving over to the IA. I don't know, Chris, have you?
No, we haven't seen that. I mean, there isn't. You know, Irish Aviation Authority is an EASA, authority. It's a serious aviation authority. To take on, for instance, business jets, it has some, but it's not a registry such as the Isle of Man or Bermuda or Cayman, where it specializes in, if you like, business jets. For instance, the Irish Aviation Authority would take, the bigger business jets, such as, the G550s of this world, or the bigger Gulfstreams and other aircraft, they would essentially treat those as commercial aircraft, notwithstanding they may be, operated privately on the basis of their, size and distance. Because of that, they are not, if you like, used extensively for business jets, Stuart. As I said, they have a number of helicopters and business jets registered, but their principal day-to-day registrations would be commercial aircraft.
And I think, there may be a naive assumption by some that all the registries work the same as the FAA, and that's not really true. You have registries that are operator registries in the EU, and you also have a paradigm, an operating paradigm that's a little bit different. Instead of business aircraft owners having their own flight departments and operating their own aircraft, I think you could probably say that a good majority of them in the EU use management companies or have the aircraft on an AOC for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, generally business jets are operated by a management by an operator which is the holder of the AOC. There is an operating agreement with that, management services company, which has the AOC, and which looks after the aircraft. That's our experience.
Right, I think that's true, and probably in the UK as well, right, Oliver?
Well, I think it's probably safe to say that in respect of most of the operations. In Ireland, the UK will have the same. The tax situation in Ireland is really quite different to the UK situation. But as far as registration is concerned, it's pretty much the same.
Okay, Mark, we've let you think.
You said
are you
have.
Still there?
I'm still here.
Let's talk a little bit about the Isle of Man. Especially in light of the rumblings coming out of the FAA about owner trusts and their use by non-US citizens. Have you seen an increase in inquiries and or registrations in the Isle of Man? And then I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics, because I know that they have a fairly straightforward process.
Sure thing. Well, just to give people a bit of a background on the Isle of Man's aircraft registry, the Isle of Man is what's called a crown dependency. So we're not part of the United Kingdom, and for that matter, we're not part of the European Union, except for trade purposes. So we're kind of an unusual sort of microstate, I guess. The Isle of Man's aircraft registry is very young. It was started on the 1st of May 2007. However, it's been phenomenally successful. As of yesterday, there had been 381 aircraft registered on the Isle of Man's aircraft register. Now, the registry is not for everybody. It's designed specifically, or its target market is specifically modern business jets and turbine helicopters that are not being operated on an AOC. In other words, they're just straightforward corporate aircraft. And the reason that it has been so successful is that the registry is remarkably flexible in the way that it approaches the standards that it is prepared to accept. Basically, when the air navigation order was passed in the Isle of Man, the authorities in the Isle of Man were given or reserved themselves the right to accept the standards of any ICAO country in the world as being compatible with that of the Isle of Man. So what that means in practice is that if you have an aircraft that's built to an FAA specification or to a Transport Canada specification or to an EASA specification or a Brazilian, the aircraft is acceptable as is straight onto the Isle of Man's aircraft register. And similarly, pilots with type ratings from any of those jurisdictions can have their licenses endorsed so that they can fly on a Manx-registered aircraft of the same type. So that gives unparalleled flexibility. Within Europe, it's the only registry which will accept the FAA, for example, as is. So that in itself obviously makes the registry attractive. But there's more to its success than just simply its flexibility. When the register was established, and the head of the registry is somebody called Brian Johnson, he had the idea that given that our target market was business aircraft, that the registry itself would provide a business-like standard of service. And what that means in practice is that the phones get answered, paperwork is turned around the same day, and if you ring up with an inquiry or a problem, they will work it through with you there and then for preference, and certainly as fast as can be achieved if not. And if something can't be achieved, I've never known them not give me an explanation which I could understand and relate to as to why something couldn't be accomplished. Overlaid on top of that still, the registry was never designed to make a profit. It was there simply to cover its costs. And consequently, the charges, the registry charges, are extremely reasonable. I've never heard anybody ever comment about them other than to say, that's fine. And lastly, well, not lastly, but one other additional attribute was that the Isle of Man was fortunate enough to secure a single letter prefix for the Isle of Man, which was the letter M, which was kind of convenient since nobody else had used that. So Isle of Man aircraft come with a letter M as a prefix, followed by a combination of four letters in any combination that you want thereafter, which people seem to like. So it gives the impression that the aircraft is registered in a large country when, of course, it's registered in a very small country. And because it's the Isle of Man, not many people really know where that is. And since we've never invaded anybody ever, it's perceived, generally speaking, as being neutral. So all of those kind of reasons are why the register has been as successful as it has been. And one additional thing that you might be interested to know is that because it operates at these business-like standards of service, it's extremely quick. We can register aircraft on the Isle of Man's aircraft registry faster than anybody else in the world, so we believe. And the fastest registration from first inquiry to having a certificate of airworthiness is 5 days currently. And for that reason, the Isle of Man, notwithstanding the fact that you're not allowed to have AOC aircraft on the register, is being used as a register for aircraft recovery. So if you've got an airliner somewhere in the world that's fallen behind on its lease payments and you need to get it out of there, the Isle of Man offers that fast and safe sanctuary. And given the flexibility with respect to the pilot's licenses, it's very easy to get the pilots able to fly on a Manx-registered plane. And we have 16 aircraft inspectors dotted around the world as well, which also helps logistically. So that's a little bit of background for you on the Isle of Man.
So, in terms of getting a C of A, you would engage the Isle of Man registry to send their version of a DAR to the aircraft.
Yeah, precisely. So there's the all the usual forms that you would expect to fill out, just the bare minimum that is necessary to get the job done. And we will, or rather the aircraft registry, will agree with you as to when and where the aircraft can be inspected. But it works the other way around. It's down to to your convenience and schedule as opposed to the other way around.
And in terms of the geographic location of the Isle of Man and the implication of the different tax rules, is an owner, for example, that registers an aircraft in the Isle of Man going to receive some beneficial tax benefits or tax planning advantages by registering in the Isle of Man if he's going to be, for example, the airplane's going to be living in the EU?
Not necessarily, but you can structure the own. Well, I mean, that's really down to the owning structure of the aircraft as opposed to the registration per se. To register an aircraft in the Isle of Man, there's a very, very broad range of people that are qualified to register. Essentially, if you're any EU person or company, or if you, broadly speaking, belong to the British Commonwealth, so that would include, say, Canada or the British Virgin Islands or Cayman or Bermuda, then you are entitled to have the aircraft registered in your, you know, in your name. So you can sort of suit yourself in terms of the holding structure. But if, in terms of, I mean, if you were to use an Isle of Man holding company, for example, then an Isle of Man company is completely tax neutral in the sense that there is no, the corporation tax rate in the Isle of Man is zero. So if you were lucky enough to make a profit in your aeroplane company, the Isle of Man isn't going to tax it. And in any event, there are no stamp duties, there's no withholding taxes, there's no capital gains taxes either. So the only tax that might concern you is VAT. And as I mentioned before, whilst the Isle of Man is not inside the European Union, it is for trade purposes, and we have a customs union with the UK. So uniquely, you can have an Isle of Man company registered for VAT, and at the same time, that company enjoys a 0% corporation tax rate. And structured in compliance with the VAT rules as they apply in the UK and the Isle of Man, then you can oftentimes reduce the VAT liability to zero. Although, as you may be aware, the tax rules in the UK and the Isle of Man have changed recently. It's a lot more difficult to comply now than it was prior to the tax changes on the 1st of January. And it's only within the last week that we've managed to start importing aircraft again at a zero rate.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because surprisingly, people are not necessarily, not everyone is aware of the change that occurred January 1, where it used to be that business aircraft or any aircraft could be imported for free circulation into the EU through the UK at a zero rate if the weight of the aircraft was a certain went beyond a certain threshold. And that ended January 1, and there was some talk of, you know, doing repetitive temporary imports and whatnot. Has there been anything that's developed since then that people should be aware of?
Well, there's a couple of things. You're absolutely right. The tax rules changed on the 1st of January. Previously, if you had an aircraft with a maximum takeoff weight of 8,000 kilograms or more, there was a presumption that it was commercial and it was therefore zero rated. The new rules are that you would need to qualify, and I'm using inverted commas here, as an airline, but I don't mean that in a public transport sense. I mean it in the sense of that legislation, which basically means you have to provide passenger transport or cargo transport services to another party, who may be your parent, incidentally, for reward, not necessarily for profit, and chiefly on international routes, which in a UK context means chiefly not flying domestically within the United Kingdom. Now, there's been some difficulties in getting the customs and VAT authorities in the UK to confirm what does qualify and what does not. And, of course, if you've got an expensive aeroplane, people hate that kind of uncertainty, which is why so few aircraft have been imported this year. Fortunately, in the Isle of Man, they don't believe it's unreasonable to confirm to a taxpayer what their tax liability is, and consequently, we have been able to determine what qualifies and what does not, and therefore we've been able to fit in with the new rules. As far as temporary admission is concerned, that's only available to non-European Union citizens. For temporary admission, it's a very vague kind of procedure, really. There's not necessarily any paperwork to support it, which is part of the problem with temporary admission, because if you're being ramp-checked in at Le Bourget in Paris, for example, there is no paperwork necessarily to show that you have actually come into Europe as a temporary admission candidate. But anyway, if you comply with the rules, and the rules are somewhat convoluted, then I guess if, and I guess that might be particularly applicable to Americans, for example, you can get into Europe for a six-month period, and provided you comply with the rules, you don't have to worry about duty and VAT. But you have to remember to follow the rules.
Right. You actually are involved with a number of companies, one relating to Isle of Man and registration,
mm-hmm.
and then the other, Martin Fiedler and Associates, relating to customs brokerage services and other things. You want to tell us a little bit more about what you're doing over here for the business aircraft owner?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, out of our Stansted office, they look after their advice pertaining to customs and duty matters relating to aircraft coming into and out of the European Union. We're also able to arrange aircraft freighting services. So if you've got a helicopter that's on the wrong side of the Atlantic, for example, we can arrange for that helicopter to be dismantled, crated up, and all of the transportation needs looked after, all of the customs paperwork looked after, and for the aircraft to be reassembled on the other side. We also have in that office as well an ETS, so emissions trading scheme verification service. So this is from an American, well, from most people's perspective, this disliked new carbon tax, which the European Union has created, which requires those operators of aircraft that are caught by it to have an annual mandatory audit of their carbon emissions. So we have a business that basically can look after that for them. So that's what happens in Stansted. And in the Isle of Man, we're in the business of forming and creating companies and trusts which could be used to own the aircraft. We deal with the VAT matters and the Isle of Man's customs office there as well. And we can provide, well, basically administrative services to support those companies too.
Are you finding, I mean, on ETS, ETS when it first came in, people were scratching their heads, especially in the U.S., they were getting notices from their various reporting states, which could be France, it could be Ireland, it could be they were apparently, you know, they weren't randomly assigned. It was based on where you had been, but you couldn't really determine where it was coming from until you got it. I mean, does that seem to have calmed down, gotten under control?
Well, everybody should know who they're supposed to be reporting to, and it was done on the basis of where most of your flying was. So if you mm-hmm. spent most of your time going to France, then you're going to end up reporting to France, for example. So the first, basically the benchmarking occurred this year, and you were supposed to file your first carbon return, I think it was on the 1st of April this year. And now, in the year that we are now, you're going to have to end up paying for the carbon, the additional carbon credits that you haven't been allocated. So whilst, you know, there's still a lot of controversy over it, and of course the Chinese have just said that they're going to blocking the sale, or the purchase rather, of a load of A380s in protest at the ETS scheme. The European Union's response to that has said that, you know, basically there is no plan B, we're sticking with it. So people are just going to have to either get used to it, unless it gets struck down judicially speaking. And I'm kind of reasonably sure that the European Union wouldn't have gone ahead with this unless they were sure of their legals. But you never know.
I think generally speaking, for most business aircraft flights, it probably amounts to a lot of paperwork, but not a huge amount of dollars that are going to be, you know, paid.
Well, I guess it's all relative, and in the greater scheme of things, I don't suppose it is going to be overly burdensome. But it is yet another tax, basically, and people obviously would prefer not to do that. I mean, the current cost of a ton of carbon is about 15 euros, but of course, no more credits are being allocated, apparently, ever to the aviation industry. And obviously, the aviation industry is going to grow, and therefore, there's going to be fewer and fewer credits to share around, which means that the price of the carbon tons is going to increase. So over time, it will become more expensive. But its purpose is to encourage more efficient usage of the fuel. And one little anomaly actually, which relates to ETS and the Isle of Man. When the ETS was put together, everybody seems to have forgotten about the Isle of Man. So there is actually a little ETS hole in Europe, and that is the island. So at present, if you are flying into Europe, then your carbon journey, if you like, starts wherever you took off and ends where you land. So if you were flying, say, from New York to London, then, the entire flight is covered. Whereas if you were to fly New York, Isle of Man, and then into London, then your carbon journey actually only starts in the Isle of Man. And if you were flying New York to Moscow and needed to stop for fuel somewhere, then if you stopped in the Isle of Man, then you never arrived in Europe at all for ETS purposes. So just a little tip there.
Oh, that's great. Chris, I know that you and I work on, you and I and Marie work on the business aviation transactions from time to time, especially the ones that are painful, right?
Absolutely. Only the painful ones, George.
Only the painful ones. But I know Matheson Ormsby and Prentice is a large firm in Ireland, and maybe you could give us a little description of what else you do and the other important work you do in Ireland.
Well, Matheson Ormsby Prentice is the number one law firm in Ireland. We're a full-service firm and total staff of about 550 people. The principal office is in Dublin. We have a working office in London and a working office in New York and a representative office in Palo Alto in California. We practice Irish law and Irish tax law only. I am head of the Aviation Finance Group. Marie is a partner in that group. We have 12 people working in that group, and we are part of the Banking and Financial Services Group, which is about 85 people in total. As I say, the firm is a full service firm, so we cover all of the usual areas from real estate to litigation to employment law, insurance law, regulatory and banking and asset management / funds advisory work. Marie and I work on aviation finance and aviation leasing matters every day. We would act for, a number of the leasing companies, aviation financing banks, airlines, and other, service providers in the aviation finance and aviation leasing business.
And I think it's important to note that business aviation is a very multi, or any aviation transaction is very multidisciplinary. I mean, it's not just a matter of registering aircraft. It's a matter of tax planning. It's a matter of dealing with employment law with respect to, for example, the crew, your flight department. It's a very multidisciplinary practice. It's not just limited to, aircraft registration. It's there's finance, there's corporate, there's tax planning, there's security issues, and other things. So I think it's important that that everyone know that we're not when you go to an aviation professional, you should be getting advice in a variety of areas, not just limited areas.
I agree, particularly before, at an early stage in any aviation transaction, you want to make sure that the structure, proposed structure of the transaction actually works and suits everybody involved, from not just from a legal perspective, but from a tax and indeed from a registration perspective as well.
Yes, and I think it's fair to say that not only have the VAT rules changed for the UK, but the tax environment in Europe as a whole has been changing on a fairly regular basis over the last 5 years. The UK was the very last stronghold of no tax or low tax, certainly with respect to VAT, with the much revered threshold of 8 tons for corporate aircraft, which Mark was referring to earlier on. In fact, I'm of the generation that, in fact, being transactions under Section 84 in Ireland a long time ago in the late 80s. And, of course, there wasn't a single aircraft transaction which did not use very, very sophisticated tax structures in order for them to be financed. And the situation will actually get more complicated rather than less. I think that's fair, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, and I'm old enough to remember the Section 84s myself, Oliver, so yes, fun times, I must say, but it is, as regards Ireland now, really, there's a couple of issues when it comes to aircraft transactions as regards structuring. One is an operating lessor of aircraft? Is that the business that the Irish company is engaging in? And if it is, then it has to have all the bells and whistles to ensure that it is carrying on a trade of leasing aircraft. And an SPV which leases one aircraft to one airline is not to all intents and purposes carrying on an active trade of leasing aircraft. And there is obviously the substance, issue, and that is dealt with by, having yourself managed by an Irish-based services company which has the substance and which manages the SPV that owns the aircraft or several aircraft, and you can achieve trading in that manner, if and to the extent you do not actually have the substance, or the company does not have the substance itself. And just lately, in February of this year, we changed the Irish securitization legislation to allow aircraft to be qualifying assets for the purposes of benefiting from the Irish securitization legislation, which essentially means that you can now have a non-trading SPV own several aircraft and to lease those aircraft on an operating lease basis to several airlines. And because in a securitization SPV, you are allowed to use profit participating debt, which sweeps out all of the profits from the SPV, on foot of the profit participating note, which in normal companies that wouldn't be possible. So we are seeing a good bit of activity using what we call Section 110. That's the relevant section in our tax code to structure transactions where aircraft are leased on an operating lease basis to airlines, and the aircraft is owned by the Irish SPV as opposed to leased in and leased out of it. For instance, in many countries, Italy, France, and others in Europe, the airlines want and demand that the company that leases the aircraft to them actually owns the aircraft. In where you have a lease in, lease out situation, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't apply, obviously. But for many airlines, they won't take aircraft on a lease in, lease out basis. Alitalia, in particular, has, you know, won't do so, and which means that your Irish company needs to own and lease the aircraft. And for many lessors, and indeed, you know, financiers, that's, you know, they don't want, you know, they may not want to have an active leasing and business in Ireland, and won't satisfy the substance requirements. So they're, you know, for an Irish company, for just having an SPV own an aircraft and lease it to Alitalia or whoever, they can now use the Section 110 company to own the aircraft and lease it to Alitalia, and we're you know, we're seeing quite a number of transactions along the, you know, those lines, and it's it seems to be working well.
And as a practical proposition, Chris, does this also apply to business jets?
Oh yes, it will apply to it will apply to any type of actually, aircraft is not used in the legislation at all. It is plant and machinery. Therefore, any form of equipment, whether it be aircraft, ships, helicopters, business jets, you know, can be covered and dealt with. And we are we have done aircraft engines through it as well. So it's yes, it will apply to business jets.
So in those circumstances, the SPV would effectively be deemed to be carrying a trade.
And not deemed to be carrying on a trade. It falls within the securitization legislation, which means that it's not carrying on a trade at all, nor does it need to, for because the purpose of carrying on a trade is really so that you can get a deduction, you know, you can deduct your interest costs on borrowings against your rental income, you know, whereas in a securitization company, that deduction is allowed irrespective and notwithstanding that you are carrying on a trade. The tax rate applicable to a securitization company is 25%, because it is considered not to be carrying on a trade, and therefore it's the passive rate of income tax. But with the use of the profit participating note to strip out all of the income that is in the company, except a very small sliver for corporate benefit purposes, the tax rate of 25% is irrelevant, because if you only have $1,000 in there, you're paying tax at 25% on that $1,000 only. Everything else has been stripped out under the note, and therefore, it's not deemed to be carrying on a trade. It's never considered to be carrying on a trade in the first place, but it is still allowed, you know, a deduction of interest cost against rental income, and it is allowed to strip out the profits or what's left in the company as a return on a profit participating note. Normally speaking, you know, in an active trading company, in a non-securitization company, if it did that, if there was a profit participating note, the return would be recharacterized as a distribution or dividend, and therefore not deductible for tax purposes. That's the consequence. That provision, or anti-avoidance provision, is disapplied in the context of a Section 110 securitization company. And we have been lobbying essentially to have that changed for possibly 10 years at this stage, and we finally succeeded in having the tax laws changed to have that implemented late last year, and it was brought in with effect from February of this year.
Let me ask Mark Byrne. Mark, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
My email address is really simple. It's m@i.im. So mike@india.indiamike. My web address is india.indiamike. And people might also like to know that we are actually arranging a conference on the Isle of Man's aviation industry, which is taking place in the Isle of Man on the 12th of July. We'll have a load of government people there to explain about the tax benefits and the incentives that people have in terms of establishing an aviation business. So it's not just about business jets, it's about a broader range of what the island's offering is. And you can find out details about that conference also at our website as well. And my phone number, should you want my phone number, is +44 1624 682 427.
And Chris or Marie, how would people get in touch with you if they needed to?
They can, I suppose, my email address is chris.quinn@mop.ie. Marie?
Mine is Marie, M-A-R-I-E, dot O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N, at mop.ie. And then the website for the firm is www.mop.ie.
Great. I will tell you that, you know, we're coming up on July 4th, and we were at the Tower of London starting our tour, and the Beefeater started the tour by asking us, and he looks very regal in what he wears, by asking us where we were all from, and he said, is there anyone from Australia? People raised their hand, and he said, welcome home. And he asked, is there anyone from America? And, of course, we raised our hand, not knowing what would come. And he said, well, you've made your choice. But without offending anyone, I am going to say happy July 4th to everyone. I want to give a shout-out to Debbie Johnson at British Airways, who was very nice to us. Like also to give a shout-out to all of our men and women in the armed forces and their families on this July 4th, and that would be both U.S. and non-U.S. Without you, we would not have the luxury of the freedom and freedom of speech that underlies the theme of all of our shows. Not that easy being international. I have to get through a lot of things. Thank you for tuning in to this broadcast of Plain Talk Radio. Hope you found it enjoyable. Remember, the show can be accessed at a later date or shared from the webpage. I want to thank my guests, Chris Quinn, Marie O'Brien, Mark Byrne, and, of course, my co-host Oliver Ross for appearing on the show. Check out the 2000... Yeah, no worries. If you have a new product or service that serves the business aviation community, drop us a note at airplaneguide@plaintalkradio.com. Don't forget about the NBAA annual convention in Las Vegas this year. I know everyone's thinking about that now. That would be, I believe, October 14th for the first few days of that week. And then on the Thursday and Friday, the wonderful tax conference, which will be a full 2 days at the end of that week. This is Stuart Lapioca, the host of Plain Talk Radio, June 30, 2011. Signing off for now. Just a reminder, give generously to Corporate Angel Network, the NBAA, and your local Business Aviation Association. Don't take advice on the golf course about business aviation. And always close with a fizzle. Good afternoon, everyone. And thanks for joining us from London. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.